Welcome to the Head Ballet Podcast. This is the place to come to hear my guests discuss with me, Paul Abbott, their favourite novelty songs. The funny, the weird, the daft, and the outright baffling tunes that have been skipping and dancing around in their heads for years. Everybody loves something that could be considered novel, so why not celebrate it? For this episode, my guest and I are being whisked back to December of 1967, and we're heading straight down the record shop to be the first in line to buy the new single from Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, Bedazzled, backed with Love Me, from the soundtrack of their new movie, Bedazzled. Sending me on this adventure is Chris Shaw, the host of one of the mightiest of all of the Beatles podcasts, I Am the Egg Pod. Each episode, Chris and a guest discuss a Beatles or Beatle-related record, and it's always an absolutely lovely listen. You can find that in all the usual podcast places, of course, or you can look it up on Twitter at IAmTheEggPod, or find Chris himself at Chris Shaw Editor. Before we get going, I'd just like to say thanks to everyone who's shared or reviewed or said kind things about the new episodes of Head Ballet this season. The intermittent release pattern is continuing, but there's plenty more to come. Please do come and find me on Twitter or Instagram at Head Ballet Pod. And if you do feel like reviewing or rating us on your podcast app, that would be marvellous. As for now, if you'd just sign here, in blood if you like, and we can get on with the episode.
Julie Andrews.
So, Chris, to get us going on this episode, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you, what do you think of most when you think of the year 1967?
Oh, don't start me. Somebody put this on Twitter and I think it's absolutely right. 1967, in terms of music, if you took that year out, everything else would make perfect sense. If you think the music from 1966, the natural progression is 1968. So obviously, I'm going to pick the Beatles, but Revolver makes more sense if you then go to the White Album.
Yeah.
Same with the Stones. Aftermath, going to Beggar's Banquet. And the same with the music. It's the most colourful, beautiful, Victoriana, psychedelic, wonderful year ever. I absolutely adore everything about it. And even sort of middle-of-the-road stuff, you've got a lot of your Engelbert Humperdinck and Long John Baldry and those kind of things going on as well. They just add even more colour. I so wish I had been around in 1967. I would have absolutely loved every second of it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating year. Like you say, it's got so much going on. And I think we're going to come across something that is very self-aware about the year that it's made in, possibly because of a satire element to it. So if you could tell everybody what you've brought along to the Head Ballet Podcast and we can get talking about it.
Okay, I've picked a single from December 1967. It's Peter Cook and Dudley Moore, Bedazzled.
Yeah, Bedazzled by Cook and Moore, Pete and Dud, Derek and Clive to be.
Yes.
Two absolute 60s heroes of mine, and I know a lot of people's. I'll give you the facts and figures for the single, because, you know, I know that everyone's bursting to know that it was on Decca, and its serial number was F12710. Comes out, like say, in December, 8th of December 1967. And, yeah, Bedazzled on side A, and a song called Love Me on side B.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you better tell us about why this single exists in the first place, because Pete and Dud, TV satirists, didn't just suddenly decide to put out a single out of nowhere.
Yeah. I still haven't seen it, but apparently there was a remake of Bedazzled, the movie, a few years ago, which is just sacrilege to me. I guess sacrilege is probably the odd thing to say about this kind of film. But it's a 1967 film. Peter Cook basically wrote it, edited it, and it starred Pete and Dud as basically Pete was the devil.
Yeah.
I'm sorry for calling him Pete, because it should be Peter. But when you're talking in terms of Dud, it's Pete and Dud, isn't it?
Yeah,
but he spent, basically throughout 66 and 67, Peter spent about 18 months making this film. Prior to that, they'd been in the US, in Broadway, hadn't they, doing Beyond the Fringe?
Yeah.
And I think by the time Peter came, because Peter was huge, you forget. He was the darling of London, and you know, with the establishment, that sort of thing. When he came back, he kind of been usurped. That was the week that was. And I know he did hold a few grudges for David Frost. So I'm sure didn't he save David Frost's life? I seem to remember David Frost was swimming and he started drowning.
Oh, yes. I think. And he makes some arch comment about shouldn't have bothered or something at some point.
Yeah. So he came back and made this film. And it is just the most wonderful film. Pure 1960s and pure 1967.
This is Stanley Moon. He's selling me his soul.
If you were Stanley Moon, would you sell your soul for Margaret Spencer?
One cheeseburger, one shandy, one portion of French fries.
To the devil you would.
I'm the horned one, the devil. Let me give you my card.
And what a dirty, rotten, low-down, double-crossing devil he is.
Somebody was on Eggpool recently saying about in the 80s, they used to mock the swinging 60s because it was this really kind of looked down on back in the 80s. But you use Twitter and social media, whatever. There is so much love for 60s music and 60s films, and this is just everything. And the song is, for me, Brian Wilson level. I know it's a novelty record, but it's an amazing piece of music.
Yeah, I mean, it's very easy to just talk about Peter Cook when you're talking about Bedazzled and that satire scene. But of course, he's inseparable from Dud, from Dudley Moore, who is just a phenomenal musician. Right through and through, every bit of Dud is just this perfect jazz improviser. He could write any style, and it's pretty much on show on this record, on both sides of this record, with his brilliant band, the Dudley Moore Trio.
There was a soundtrack album. And that is probably in my top 3-4 albums from 1967. It is astonishing. He is such a brilliant songwriter. Veers into, again, I keep comparing him to Brian Wilson, but that's the only person I can think of taking classical elements and then singing, you know, things like L.S. Bumblebee, which didn't come on here, but he'd done before.
Yeah.
You know, he can and again, that's an amazing piece of music, but because it's Pete and Dud, it's primarily, most of it is him going bum, 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 bum. You know, it's a joke where he can use the word bum. But using the platform of this beautiful piece of music, I love it.
I can hear the hum of the lovely L.S. Bum, bum, bumblebee. Now it's time to fly.
It's fantastic. I mean, in terms of what Pete and Dud put out as records, obviously there's the Dudley Moore Trio records and all Dudley Moore solo stuff, but in terms of the singles, there's not many, and there's only one that gets in the charts, and that's Goodbye from the Not Only But Also song that they always do. That gets to number 18.
Is it really?
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it pops into the charts, pops out of the charts again.
This mortal coil on which we strut and fret our weary way, as Shakespeare put it, God bless him, what a wonderful old chap Shakespeare was, bald but sexy.
They follow that up in 65 with the Peter Cook and Dudley Moore EP, which is a spoken word thing, and some music on it as well from the Dudley Moore Trio.
Mm.
They have a single based on something they did at the Royal Variety Performance. They do a song called Isn't She a Sweetie in 1966, which is very silly and wasn't going to touch the charts. You know, funny though it is and silly, it's a very odd thing.
Seen much of Lady Veronica? Oh, I've seen practically all of her. Well, how is she? Oh, nude as ever.
Have you been down to Starker's recently?
Yes, she invited me down there last weekend.
What a lovely country seat.
Yes, and isn't she a sweetie?
Isn't she a sweetie?
Isn't she a sweetie?
Then we get into 1967, the L.S. Bumblebee, which is is their perfect sort of grab at the sudden open talking about LSD and its influence on music. Then we get to late 67 and we get Bedazzled and Love Me, which is an absolutely brilliant single, but doesn't get anywhere near the charts.
Yeah.
Which is baffling.
It is. I would compare those, well, LS Bumblebee and Bedazzled as singles, for me, are equally as good as the Stones starting off with Let's Spend the Night Together and then moving on to We Love You.
Yeah.
They're equally valid as two brilliant 67 psychedelic songs.
I mean, before we move on, I must say there was one more single put out by Pete and Dudd, and that was in 1977, and it was called Magnolia Opus, and it was an advertising disc for the company Magnolia Mouldings.
No way. Which, oh, wow. Yeah. Is it still in existence?
I think you can hear it on YouTube.
Oh, I'd love to hear that.
It's not essential, I wouldn't say. You know, no one's going to be scrabbling to re-release that for Record Store Day or anything.
It says here, for instance, that for sheer variety, their range of mouldings are second to none.
Yes.
No, second to none.
Second to none, not second to nuns.
No, they always finish second nuns.
Yeah. Huge habits.
Yeah. There's something magical about Pete and Dud in the 60s as well.
Yeah.
Which I have to mention them. Derek and Clive were very 70s. Mm. I mean, the stench of the 70s is all over them. But similarly, the 60s stuff is, they're the Beatles of comedy for me, really.
Yeah, it's a funny thing because obviously the Beatles get, it's the Goons to the Beatles, but of course it's not. The middle of that is Beyond the Fringe and the Establishment Club and Pete and Dud.
Yeah.
And what's amazing about Pete and Dud, and I could quite happily just talk about them forever, is that yeah. Like so much great stuff from the 60s, so little of it exists now to actually watch back.
Oh, I know.
It's heartbreaking.
Yeah, they wiped a load of them, didn't they? Yeah.
Yeah, so like Doctor Who fans, of which I am one, wailing and gnashing their teeth about missing episodes, yeah, I would rather get all the Pete and Dud stuff back before I got Doctor Who stuff back, in all honesty. Because the stuff that is that does exist, which is, I think, mainly like the film stuff that tended to be saved separately,
yeah,
is wonderful. And the few bits of a full episode you see are great. Yeah, God, they're so
funny. Oh, they are.
They're so funny.
Yeah, it's weird because I don't even know how I knew about them from a really early age. I think it's probably my mum kept. She must have had some. I'm sure she had one of the albums because I knew of Pete and Dud before I went to school.
Yeah.
And I don't know how. And that was in the 70s, but yeah.
It is. I was going to ask you how you first came across them, because I was trying to work out how I first came across them, and I assume it's because I was reading so many Beatles books, and if you have, you know, anyone who writes any contextual stuff about the 60s, very often will talk about how important Beyond the Fringe is and things like that, and then the moment you see that the best of what's left of Not Only But Also, it's very hard not to fall in love with that, because it is so funny. Yeah. Not just their Dagenham Dialogue stuff, which is unassailable, like the art gallery sketch and things. Also, yeah, I suppose actually while I'm thinking about it, a lot of those sketches, you can see them cracking up and laughing and looking at each other.
Mm.
And it's those chinks in the armour that I think that's what makes like Beatles outtakes and the anthologies and stuff so interesting.
Yeah.
Seeing the real humans making this amazing art and enjoying it as they do it, for the most part.
Works out about £50,000 of body, didn't it?
Well, you could get the real nude ladies over there for that price.
Yeah. My Aunt Dolly would have done it for nothing.
She does anything for nothing, doesn't she? Yeah. The old cow. You enjoying that, Sam?
I think, again, I got a Beatles book when I was very young, and there was a photo of John as the, is it Dan, the upper-class lavatory attendant?
Yes. Yeah.
Who appeared in an episode of Not Only But Also.
Excuse me, sir. Are you a member?
I'm sorry, I'm not. I'm from American television. I'm doing an interview downstairs.
I'm sorry, sir. You must be a member to go in here.
Would it help if I told you that I was the Duke and Duchess of Windsor?
Oh, sorry, sir. Didn't recognise you, madam.
But yeah, that video that came up, 80s, was it? I think that came out.
Yes, yeah.
And we had, we were, get the violins out. We were literally the poorest family in the whole of Bushy, basically. We had no money. And somehow we rented. In fact, I think it was my... it might have been my first job, I don't know. Oh, it was a summer job working for... how's this for a digression? Working for the guitarist from the Foundations, who had his home studio.
Right.
I got a summer job there thinking, oh, I'm going to meet... Because I knew, you know, who the 60, you know, 60s artists were.
Yeah.
And I spent the whole summer painting his boat, which was great fun. But from that money, I started renting from Rediffusion, I think it was, a video player.
Brilliant.
And I could afford to buy video. And that was, I think that was the first video I bought, the Pete and Dud one. And, oh, it was just to see them, because you'd hear things. There was a guy who used to be on Radio 1, on Adrian Just, who used to play clips of comedy shows. Mm-hmm. And I used to record it, and you could all the Pete and Dud stuff was just, it was so much funnier than everything else. It was amazing, yeah. So to see them, and as you say, the corpsing, and they really reminded me, you know, the relationship with Pete and Dud on screen, at least, was very much the perceived relationship between John and Paul from the Beatles, I think. John and Peter were very similar in kind of stern, take no nonsense, and the more affable Dud and Paul. Just reminded me of that. They were like the comic version of the Beatles.
Really. And both Pete and John knew how to just cast a look at their partner that would get them, but a look that would say, I've cornered you here in a joke, or I've something like that, which you see the crack up happening, and it's like, oh yeah. But luckily, with Dud, with Pete, with John, with Paul, they could all give as good as they got and made this great thing.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we better talk about this record a bit more then.
Well,
let's start with Bedazzled. Let's start with side one. I suppose, there's a scene in the film. We're not going to talk about the film too much, but yeah, it's essentially it's seven deadly sins. It's the Faust story. It's Dud offering up his soul to try and capture the heart of the wonderful Eleanor Bron. Another nice Beatles tie in there.
Yes.
As well. And we get to this scene where, in order to do it, he's been magically turned into a pop star on a fantastic sort of replica of the Ready Steady Go set.
Yes, yeah. Well, he's got seven wishes, hasn't he? And there's a spoiler, but six of them are about trying to get Margaret Spencer to fall in love with him. And there's a brilliant moment in the film just before they do this where Peter is really, really winding Dudley up. George Spigot, who's played by Peter, is winding up Stanley Moon. And because the scene actually follows the one where with Lillian Lust.
Oh, Raquel Welch.
Raquel Welch.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dudley, I must call him Stanley Moon. Yeah. But I love the fact that if anybody hasn't seen it, basically the devil is tempting Dudley by putting them in these different scenarios where he, in theory, he should automatically win the heart of Margaret. But it basically Lillian Lust, who all but makes love to him, turns out she's married to Sloth. It's just sort of, all right, okay, that's it. And to get each one of his wishes, again, if nobody's seen it, George Spigot has to shout Julie Andrews. And to get out of it, Dudley has to just go,
yeah.
Very silly, but brilliant. But prior to this, Stanley Moon's saying, oh, can I just be with a woman? You know, women yearn for me and crave for me and lust after me, but most of all, Margaret lusting after me. And it's the way Peter, who his acting people have criticised, but I think he is perfect in this. It's absolutely perfect. But he builds Dudley into a frenzy. He's going, what if I tell you what people go mad for these days? It's your pop stars. I can just see it, Stanley, standing there in your skin-tight pants, the music pounding, the women screaming, Margaret lusting, the drums throbbing out with their incessant animal beat. And Stanley goes, let me have it! And it's the scene with George Spigot, and he looks like Pete Townsend. His arms are going, just screaming, Julie Andrews. It's just, I don't know why, it's just crazy every time.
Let me have it!
Julie Andrews!
But yeah, as you say, then it cuts to the Ready, Steady, Go, or a, you know, copy of Ready, Steady, Go.
I think it says on the, you see the name of the show up on the, one of the shots. It's just called something like Go Going.
Oh, is it?
Something that simple and silly.
Initially, I mean, it starts with Dudley singing the B-side, Love Me. And obviously, everything's going well. Margaret's screaming and he's surrounded by screaming girls. But then it cuts to Peter's performance, which I am convinced this performance, if you've seen it, inspired Robert Smith, Neil Tennant and Terry Hall, who have basically, I think their careers have been built on this this clip. And yeah, he's basically just standing there singing this really, really horrible lyrics, and Margaret Spencer is just staring, utterly entranced. And you see it cuts to Stanley, he's sort of glowering at him. And yeah, it's just a surreal performance. The look on Peter's face, there's a line in there, "You fill me with inertia," which is genuinely evil. And it's something you'd actually take a bit further on a particularly grim Derek and Clive sketch. But he stares at the dancers, and the snarl on his face is, oh, horrendous. But
yeah,
it's a entrancing piece of footage and music.
You drive me wild, you drive me wild.
You fill me with inertia.
It's interesting because I think if you didn't know it was from a film and someone showed it to you alongside perhaps another load of Ready, Steady, Go clips, you wouldn't necessarily say, well, this isn't a song from the period, from Ready, Steady, Go. This, you know, but the weird thing with Bedazzled is what I was saying about it comments on 1967 as much as anything, because it takes a year of the Summer of Love, or whatever, you know, you want to describe it as. Obviously, it's historically known as that now. We've got to the winter of that year, and this is a very dark view of, you know, everybody should love everyone, everyone should be kind. You've got the most static, evil sort of song that's ever been put out. I mean, Pete can't sing.
No.
This is proven time and time again.
Yes.
So he has to do his speech singing on this, and that makes it even more malevolent and unusual.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It's, again, yeah, the Ready, Steady, Go, because, of course, the dancers were led by Sandy Sargent, who was a choreographer on Ready, Steady, Go, and also Beat Club in Germany. You get a lot of those clips, don't you?
Yeah.
Beat Club in Germany. Why couldn't Top of the Pops and Ready, Steady, Go do what they did and just keep all the footage?
I know.
So she adds that authenticity.
Yeah. So I like the actual, the female backing vocals on this are great. So you've got this call and response thing, essentially. It's, and mad 1967 phasing sounds, I think, is the most, you know, thing that betrays it most for the period.
Definitely. Yeah. And again, it's that sort of LS Bumblebee, you know, that could be an authentic psychedelic piece of music, apart from the lyrics. And similarly with this, but there's one line where the backing singers are singing, "You shimmer, you glitter," and then it's "you shitter," really, really subtly.
Oh, down.
You shitter,
you bore me.
That's a song from 1967, predating Hey Jude, with the swearing in that.
When you begin to make
indeed. Yeah. And I think the great thing is these two songs work brilliantly as contrasts to each other. So you've got Bedazzled, like you say, you've got Pete Stock Still delivering these grotesque sentiments, you know, with complete disdain for all around him, all humanity, all people, all love. But the song that's come before it, Love Me, is the opposite. It's an absolute, it's dud in full sort of screaming, heart-rending, you know. It's a fantastic song in itself, I think, Love Me, and it's dud can sing.
Yeah.
He's really characterful in this as well.
Tell me you need me, touch me and say, oh, love me. I'm on my knees, would you please come and love me? Oh, love me. I need you so, please don't.
one thing I don't understand really with these, though, is what do we compare them to? I mean, you know, are there real world songs? They sort of are really obviously 67 songs, but they're also like, I can't work out what they're like to compare them to.
No. Again, the only person I can compare it to is Brian Wilson. Dudley learnt classical piano, and you can hear it on a lot of Derek and Clive stuff where they're messing around. Oh, don't get me talking about them. And he is just constantly exploring strange chords that you wouldn't hear in a traditional pop song.
Yeah.
Primarily with the A side, but similarly with Love Me, and it's pickety third, isn't it, going from the major to the minor throughout the song. That it's a really brilliant piece of music.
Tell me you're full of yearning for me.
Yeah, Brian Wilson every time. I put Wilson Moore, Lennon McCartney, Wilson Moore, 67.
Yeah, it's interesting. What I thought I'd do then, Chris, is I took a look at... So this, I mentioned the date that this came out. This was the 8th of December, 1967. So I thought I'd have a look at the top 10 of what they were about to go up against for that week.
Right, yeah.
So I'll run down from number 1 to 10, and you can give me any thoughts about what was in here briefly. Well, I'll let you have a quick guess if you know what was number 1 in December, on the 8th of December 1967.
That'd be Hello Goodbye, wasn't it?
It is, yes. Top marks, yeah.
Really? Wow.
So, Hello Goodbye by the Beatles is at number 1. Number 2, we've got Let the Heartaches Begin by Long John Baldry.
Yes. There was a lot of that kind of middle-of-the-road music, I don't remember, but I have honed up on 67. I'm such a geek.
It's all right, you're in good company. And I thought, well, actually, listening to the Long John Baldry song, which, you know, it's a fairly well-known song, it's quite a big hit, so obviously it's number 2 here, and it wasn't number 1. It's some of the vibe of Love Me is there, those songs that are all about, I've been hurt, I'm pleading, all that sort of stuff.
Just make me feel aware of the loneliness I find so hard to bear.
Yeah, yeah, very much so. And the sing and the vocal delivery as well.
Yeah.
Dudley's kind of doing a comedy version of that.
What have we got on number 3? We've got Everybody Knows by the Dave Clark Five.
Everybody Knows. Yeah, yeah.
Which is soppy Dave Clark Five song.
It is. Well, he was instrumental in getting the Ready Steady Go videos back on, wasn't he? Back in, was it Channel 4 they used to show Ready Steady Go?
Yeah, so he bought all the rights to them, didn't he?
And all the footage of Dave Clark 5, there's loads of screaming overdubbed, more so than the Beatles.
Yes, it's a very interesting thing. And again, I could do a whole podcast on this about how Dave Clark 5 is... I mean, it's not like he didn't have a place in history. He had a very significant place in pop music history, but he's bought and managed his legacy via the things that he controls right up until even in recent years, where he's putting out and producing shows saying the Dave Clark Five, you know, 50 years of the British invasion, and making his name the big name on do you know what? I won't get into my Dave Clark Five.
No.
To anyone who read my recent review of... Catch Us If You Can will know how I feel about Dave Clark 5. in terms of 60s films that are not as good as Bedazzled, let's move on. Number 4, If the Whole World Stopped Loving by Val Dunican.
Oh, I can't remember how that goes.
It's just...
Go on, sing it for
me. I'm not singing it. It's sort of country-ish tripe, really, I'm afraid. Poor Val. He's definitely he's done better stuff than that. Number 5, then, we've got... Something's Gotten Hold of My Heart by Gene Pitney, which is a really good song.
Superb, yeah, yeah.
And it's particularly good. It seems very good when you consider it sandwiched between that Val Dunican song and Careless Hand by Des O'Connor.
Okay.
So, which is, I mean...
It's the summer of love.
Yeah.
The summer of Viagra.
I mean, Des only left us, you know... Last year or the year before, wasn't it? It wasn't long ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, Careless Hands is not a brilliant song. But then number 7, we've got Love Is All Around by the Troggs.
There's a lot of songs here that would subsequently be number 1 in the 80s. 90s.
Yes, that's a good point, actually, yeah.
How bizarre.
And, well, at number 8, we've got Baby, Now That I've Found You by The Foundations.
No way. Alan Warner.
Yeah.
His lovely boat.
Yeah, indeed.
Wonder if he's still got it. Oh, I hated that. I hated that. And do you know what? I kept saying, can I come into the studio? Because I really wanted to get into studio work.
Yeah.
And the only day he let me in, because I used to basically paint his boat. And when people came over to record songs, I'd make them tea.
Yeah.
And the only time he let me near his mixing desk was he said, yeah, can you pick each one up and clean underneath with a little rag? And I got about, and it was a 24-track, you know. I got about a third of the way through and I had tears in my eyes and I just walked out and got the bus and went home. However, I had enough money to get a video recorder. I digress.
The Foundations are in this chart, just to bring that memory back again. Number 9 is World by the Bee Gees, which I'd never heard before, but that's, I think, the most psychedelic song in this top 10.
Really? I don't recall that one, I have to be honest.
Yeah, it's a weird little one, that. And at number 10, it's I'm Coming Home by Tom Jones.
Oh, blimey. What a chart.
It's interesting, isn't it, to think that this is how 67 is going out when we, you know, yeah. We've had the domination of Pepper and all that in summer.
Mm. I find late 67 really interesting because you've got bands, well, artists, say Simon Dupre doing Kites and Julie Driscoll, Brian Auger Trinity, early 68, doing all these very, very psychedelic songs. But the artists who, you know, stuck it out and kept going were already, so you've got Tin Soldier by the Small Faces, which is already moving on. And I guess I Can See for Mars would have been around then as well, but that's kind of psychedelic, but definitely moving forward in a more rock direction.
Yeah.
And it's weird how and obviously Lady Madonna the following year for the Beatles. They were already moving on. But early 68, late 67, you've got a hell of a lot of artists that probably only had a couple of hits at most, doing very, very psychedelic, not heavy, very lightweight psychedelia that came out. And it's just, yeah, fascinates me. Probably no one else.
What I find fascinating is how for those big bands like the Beatles, how the psychedelic thing literally becomes very dark very quickly. It's not, you know, Pepper's fairly light, but it's got some bizarre, weird undertones. And by the time you get to the stuff on the Mystery Tour, I find a lot of that very, very unusual, very unsettling, quite spooky stuff.
Mm.
So that light, frothy, sunshiny psychedelia doesn't really last as long as you'd think. And then you get certain bands in America, for instance. One thing that I was thinking about, I was listening to Bedazzled. Bedazzled's, the song has got this sort of dark psychedelia thing to it.
Mm.
It reminded me of something off, I don't know if you've heard, the United States of America.
Yeah.
There's stuff on there that Bedazzled sounds a bit like, you know, just like, yeah. Like you're having a bit of a bad trip, maybe. Oh, something's gone wrong.
It's, I think, taking it out of the film, because in the film it has context and you can see exactly what's going on. Just releasing that as a single, you know, that's a sort of, it's as dark as sort of Vegetable Man or something like that. It's that level of dark psychedelia. And out of context, it's no wonder, you know, people still, you look at people on YouTube or whatever, and they're just astounded by hearing this and seeing this crazy bit of music from 67. Oh, I love it.
You just said something that's reminded me, of course, that the official name of the group that performs Bedazzled is
Drimble Wedge and the Vegetation.
Which just goes to show sort of Peter Cook. I don't know whether he's holding pop music in total disdain, but I think he sort of is.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth mentioning is, of course, he's only 3 years older than John Lennon. It's not like 10 years older and from a totally different generation. Yeah.
Well, John and Paul were always going to the establishment, weren't they? They're always hanging out there, and it's just Peter. I hate that cliche of, you know, after a certain time he gave up. I don't take that. But when they took it to Broadway, he was actively hanging out with the Kennedys. one in particular, which we won't go into. And when you're that young, hanging around with the president of the US just for a social, how do you then come back? You're going to have an air of superiority, which he didn't really play on. He generally looked down on people, I think.
Yeah, there was a very interesting interview on the Bedazzled DVD that I've got with Barry Humphries, who...
Yes, he's in this, isn't he?
Yeah. He is, yes. He's very briefly in it, playing a brilliant take on the character of Envy. But this interview with him is very much about Peter Cook and how Cook acted around people, how he was constantly on, constantly having to make a joke, but not in a funny, ha-ha, let's all join in clowning way. It's very much a front for him. And it's a very interesting interview with Barry Humphries. If anyone's not watched it, they should definitely look that up. Not least because Barry Humphries is just wonderful to listen to anyway.
Yeah. One thing we haven't mentioned is Peter Cook looks beautiful.
Yes.
In the 60s. Yeah. He was, you know, supermodel level. It's difficult to think of it, you know, having seen sort of Darren Clive onwards. But, you know, people say he would walk in the room and just people would melt just at the sight of him. And you see interviews with him. It's weird because there's an interview he did with Mavis Nicholson, and she did an interview with Peter and Dudley. And they're talking about pretty well what you were saying. Do you use funny voices to cover up your insecurities? But Peter's voice at the time is this very smooth, very eloquent, beautiful man.
No, I don't usually think very far ahead. I think of continuing doing... I've been very lucky because I've been able to do, on the whole, what I've wanted in my own time. And I like to continue doing that, both acting and writing.
And it's weird, post-Derek and Clive, his voice completely changed into Derek.
Yes.
And he never had that voice again. And then they did another interview 20 years later, I think it was, probably when the VHS came out. And he's completely different. He's just, you would never know that it was the same Peter Cook.
There'll be occasional movement behind the curtain, but that'll just be people moving furniture. There won't be any girls, and they'll charge us an enormous amount for non-existent champagne. He said, what kind of place is that? I said, the place we've just walked into.
It's interesting to see how he progressed over the years, because obviously what happens with Dud is Dud goes... And Dud is absolutely charming as well, and I suspect if you were in a room with Dud, you would, and especially if there was a piano there, you'd be fawning all over him, because he was just... Yeah, he was such a talented and twinkly chap. But of course, he becomes the big sex symbol movie star of the 1980s, at which point Peter's become not the sex symbol of the 1960s that he once was, which is an interesting inversion in their lives, to see Dudley suddenly, you know, making all those films like 10, etc., and Arthur 2 on the Rocks and all that stuff.
Yeah. I think one thing I would say about the song Bedazzled and Dudley's songwriting, that the album, just go and buy it. Because as well as Bedazzled, he also does a track called Lillian Lust, which is Racker Welch Scene, which is like a jazz version of Bedazzled, but an instrumental version. And again, I think there's footage on YouTube. It is astonishing. It's an astounding piece of music, and it really highlights the intricacies of these strange chords. They're just so discordant, yet they work so well. But to see him actually doing it and playing it, you can actually get an idea of what's going on. It's just the best piece of footage of Dudley Moore playing piano I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's such a brilliant piano player. Gosh, I'd like to be able to play piano like that. But his band is amazing. I mentioned them at the sort of top of this. It's like the Dudley Moore Trio. He's got two people that he's with quite a long time, Pete McGurk on bass and Chris Karen on drums. And one of the joys of the American edition of The Best of What's Left of Not Only But Also is it has all the extant, like, Dudley Moore Trio stuff from the sketch show.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's just so lovely to see them playing together and to see them accompanying all this all these guest stars they have, because they had lots of musical guests on the show, like Cilla and Dionne Warwick and Marion Montgomery. And to have hear those jazz arrangements done by Dud and the band is just phenomenal.
You forget the show was originally going to be called the Dudley Moore Show on the pilot. And it's only because Dudley invited Pete to come on that it then evolved into that. And it would have been brilliant if it just had been the Dudley Moore Show.
Yeah.
Again, that footage I was talking about of him playing Lillian Lust, Chris on drums, that I defy anybody to look, even Keith Richards, to look more stoned than him. It's an astonishing piece of footage.
Brilliant.
Oh. And again, you forget this song. This is how powerful a piece of music it has been covered by Tony Hatch and Nick Cave.
Blimey.
Which is astonishing.
Gosh, that's two names. Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, it's a brilliant album, and I think it was reissued not too long ago by, I think it's Trunk Records put it out again in a nice edition. So the reissue comes with an LP called Pete and Dud Invite You to Hell, which is just promotional material that they're recording for radios, and they've just stuck it, literally improvised adverts with stupid voices. So you can get quite a lot of your Pete and Dud for your money if you buy the reissue.
Yeah. Well, the B-side of LS Bumblebee was... wasn't it called the B sides?
Yes,
B E E, and they do the pun on. Oh, I do like to be on the B sides. I do like to be beside the A sides, kind of thing.
Yeah,
and it's just like a proto Derek and Clive. I know we said before we did this, you don't want to talk about them.
Well, yeah,
they do briefly.
Yes, let's get Derek and Clive out the way. Now, well, I'll just caveat that. Just say, it's not that I don't mind talking about them. I've got the Derek and Clive stuff, but I don't want to come across as a sensitive little soul, but I am quite a sensitive little soul, and I much prefer Peter Cook and Dudley Moore in Not Only But Also than this stuff from Derek and Clive, which strikes me a lot of the time as needlessly cruel.
Oh, no, it's horrendous. It's abysmal, but it's my way into learning about Pete and Dud was through that, because I used to babysit for my sister.
Yeah.
And there was a whole load of blank D90s. So I would invariably pick one out, and it'd usually be stuff recorded off the charts or whatever, and I'd just sit and listen to that. Occasionally check on the child and enjoy the music. But there was one I put on, and it was the argument sketch, and I just couldn't believe what I was hearing it. And I thought it sounded like Albert Steptoe. I just couldn't get my head who it was. And then gradually I recognised, and I realised that's Pete and Dud. Out of context, you had no idea. Mm. So I surreptitiously took a copy, and I'm ashamed to say the whole year in my school, it's my fault that Derek and Clive was introduced, because I lent it to a friend who then took a copy. It's horrendous. It's abysmal. It's appalling stuff. But as a 13-year-old, it was, you think, the young ones, the impact of first seeing that when you were a kid at school, it was that. And then to discover this thing that was even more anarchic, that you had no idea, you didn't know when it was recorded or what was going on. And it was only, somebody told me, oh, well, they did this thing in the 70s and Led Zeppelin took copies and blah, blah, blah. And then you think, okay. And then you go back to Pete and Dud and rediscover them, and then you realise how miserable they were when they were recording Derek and Clive. Dudley particularly was putting up with horrendous stuff.
Oh yes, it's awful.
From Pete. And yeah, it just created my absolute love for Pete and Dud, basically.
Right, anyway, let's get back to the nice Pete and Dud.
Yes.
Yeah, so the film Bedazzled is absolutely brilliant. I mean, they made, it's their first one where they star together as the lead stars. And the only other one where they're the dual lead is The Hound of the Baskervilles. I don't know if you've seen that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Not a big fan.
No. I
to be fair.
that was from 1978. I had a copy on VHS, which was not only awful quality, but also the sound on this VHS had slipped. So it was almost completely unwatchable. Oh. When Dudley sort of panics, he just does characters with a strange Welsh accent. And he just plays Watson as Welsh all the way through, this high pitched Welsh Watson, but it does contain one of my favourite jokes of all time, of which is I like to strike a happy medium, and I'm not going to explain the context for that, but it's It's a good, funny joke.
Yeah. Well, he uses a Welsh accent in Bedazzled as well, doesn't he?
Yeah, for one of his sequences.
In the intellectual.
Yeah. Yeah. I do love them when they turn up in films. So, like, they turn up in The Bed Sitting Room, which is one of my all-time favourite films. Talk about bleak 60s cultural items.
And what a cast.
Yes.
It's astonishing.
It is. It's extraordinary. And they turn up on a couple of Hollywood romps as well, sort of chase movies and things like that. It's an interesting thing. Yeah, but this is Pete and Dud through and through, like you say, Pete writing it. But then getting Stanley Donen to direct it.
I know. He was Seven Brides for... Was it him?
Yeah, Brides for Seven Brothers and Singing in the Rain. It's like...
Yeah.
And then this.
But I'm sure Stanley Donen wanted to do it, didn't he? He approached them, I'm sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure I heard that.
It does feel strange that this isn't a Richard Lester film, because it just seems like it would be, but I'm glad it's not.
I know that when Peter took the script to Donen, I think they spent 3 months before they even considered doing anything else. So it was very... Yeah, and he said that they didn't change anything from that initial script. There was no rewrites. That was it. It was perfect. And I think Dick Lester would have... Yeah, it was too... You know, people talking over all the time, and it would have been a completely different film. It wouldn't have suited this particular film, I don't think.
Yeah, you have to be able to hear Pete and Dud as Pete and Dud talking to each other crisply and clearly in that way of badinage. Right, well, I'll say one more thing about the film, then we'll just pop back to summarise the music. And that is, there's a scene at the end where the devil is shouting at God, and he moans about all the things that he's going to curse the earth with, like about... planes flying over and motorways and Tasty Freeze and Wimpy Bars. And one of the things he says is sonic booms. And I was delighted to find that presumably the reason he's put Sonic Boom in there is because they were filming Bedazzled when there was a test flight of a supersonic aeroplane over London, which blew out all the windows in the place that they were filming.
Really? Wow.
I've got a little clipping from the Daily Mirror of the 18th of July here. They're testing Concorde.
Wow.
It says more than 30 people phoned Scotland Yard to report a, quote, explosion, and filming of Bedazzled starring Peter Cook and Dudley Moore had to stop when the bang shattered windows at a Fulham house where they were working.
Wow. Oh, man, that's amazing. That's amazing. And they just put it in the script. So there was a bit of a script change.
Presumably that's why it's there. So that's interesting.
That rant at the end is just prophetic, isn't it? It's Wimpy Burgers, concrete runways, motorways. It's, very surreal. I mean, the one thing I must say, I'm a Christian.
Yes.
So for me, I did actually have a bit of struggle whether I wanted to talk about it or not. But I think it's brilliant theology. Peter, you know, neither Peter or Dud had faith, I don't think, but for me, it's straight out of the Bible.
Yes.
It's all about temptation. Yeah, fascinating. But it's got great music.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm an atheist, but I've got a Christian background, and there's nothing in there that's not drawn from the source text, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not putting the boot into religion, per se, because that would kill the whole concept of the film, but they're just playing with those big questions of good and evil, temptation, you know, how being nice to other people, or what does it, are you doing it for yourself, or are you doing it for the other person type thing, you know, lessons that are universal. So, right, this record then, why should people seek out Bedazzled, Backed With Love Me? What should make them come to it? Give them the hard sell, give them the soft sell, whatever you like.
It's not a novelty record. It is a novelty record, but it's not. If you love...
Yeah.
It's only a novelty record if you consider the Monkees to be novelty. Therefore, it's brilliant psychedelia. It's dark. Again, I've made the comparisons with Brian Wilson, and I would stand by that. Astonishing piece of music. Peter Cook is cool as he's never been cool before. The backing vocals are beautiful, the orchestration and the music and the flange and the psychedelic swirls. It's a genius bit of psychedelia. If you love 60s psychedelia, go and get it. Same with Love Me. I suppose it's Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane.
Yeah.
Same thing, but by Pete and Dud.
Yeah.
Love me! Love me! Love me! Love me!
There's the hard sell.
Yeah, it's a wonderful showcase. It's one side for... Well, I mean, Dud sort of gets both sides because he's doing the music, but... In terms of, yeah. But it's Pete one side, Dud the other, and it's wonderful. And it is even better listening to it in the middle of the soundtrack album because you get all the surrounding wonderful jazzy soundtrack.
Yeah. Oh, just get the whole album then.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fantastic. Righto. So yeah. Just before we close, I do feel I should mention here, because I don't know if anyone who's listening to this will have listened to my appearance on Tim Worthington's Looks Unfamiliar, but I did mention on that... an occasion in 1991, I believe it was, March 1991, where my nan played music live with Dudley Moore.
Tell me more.
Which is a strange thing to have in your family history.
How did that happen?
Well, this is the thing. So, Going Live was a TV show, Saturday morning TV show.
Yeah.
And what they used to do is they'd have a section called Live Line, where a celebrity was in the studio, or just Philip Schofield, would ring up someone because they'd said, Give my auntie a ring or my sister a ring and say, but sometimes they'd send the cameras round.
Mm.
So on this occasion, they sent some cameras round to my nan's flat. My nan, who lived in Essex, when I was talking about this on Looks Unfamiliar, my nan was still alive. Sadly, she died at the start of last year.
Oh, sorry about that.
They sent the cameras round, but in the studio's Dudley Moore.
Wow.
And the reason they sort of nominated my nan was because she had this little tiny keyboard. Little tiny electric keyboard, and she could pick out Any Dream Will Do, which of course was from Joseph and the Technicolor Dreamcoat, which Phil Schofield had been in.
Yeah.
And she's been made to play this on live TV with cameras and all my Essex relatives down sat in the house with her. And wow. And Dudley's in the studio vamping along on the piano as she plays.
No way. Yeah. It's a duet then.
Yeah.
It's an official duet. Wow.
It's a Grace Abbott-Dudley Moore duet, and I'd love to find the footage. So if anyone's listening to this has any clue where we could get it, if anyone's got it on tape anywhere or can digitize it or knows, I would dearly, dearly love to see that, especially seeing as you know, we lost my nan last year.
Oh, yeah, somebody get hold of that. That'd be beautiful. Oh, lovely.
And the irony is, afterwards, my nan says, I don't even like Dudley Moore.
Bless her heart.
Yeah. Well, there we go then. Right. Well, all that remains for me to say then is thank you very much, Chris Shaw, for bringing along this absolutely wonderful bit of 1967 film soundtrackery. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Paul. It's been a pleasure. Lovely to meet you and love your podcast, and it's brilliant.
Goodbye. 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 We're leaving your skeleton.